Live from WNUR News, I'm Angelina Campanile. You're listening to the 6 o'clock news on WNUR 89.3 FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. It's Friday, November 19th, 2021. Coming up on WNUR News tonight, what's at stake for abortion rights in America? Behind the scenes of the new King Richard movie, Sesame Street welcomes a new Muppet, and students talk about fall 2021 at NU. Those stories and more tonight on WNUR News. Thanks for tuning in to WNUR News 89.3. Tonight in Campus Local, I sit down with one of Northwestern's constitutional law professors to better understand the two major abortion cases currently before the Supreme Court. Have a listen. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments regarding the Texas Heartbeat Act. It's currently the nation's most restrictive abortion law. Also known as SB 8, the law has effectively halted access to abortion in the nation's second largest state, sending Texas patients across state lines to terminate their pregnancies. What makes this abortion law interesting is that it's enforced by private citizens. Find yourself in Texas and you can sue anyone you believe has aided or abetted a woman who's received an abortion in the state after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The Justice Department argues this law directly conflicts with the constitutional right to privacy established nearly 50 years ago in the case of Roe v. Wade. The Supreme Court will also hear a case next month regarding the constitutionality of a Mississippi law that bans abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. The law leaves no exceptions for rape or incest. WNUR News sat down with Director of Legal Studies at Northwestern University, Joanna Grissinger. We wanted to know what upholding these statutes could mean for the future of abortion rights in America.
What does the Constitution say or not say about the right to an abortion?
Mostly when we're talking about the Constitution, we're talking about Supreme Court cases about the Constitution, interpreting the constitutional language. And so when we talk about abortion, there is a constitutional right to privacy located in a number of cases, but Griswold v. Connecticut and Roe v. Wade in particular, as grounding the right to terminate a pregnancy as part of a broader right to privacy protected by the 14th Amendment.
And what did the court rule in Roe v. Wade?
The court ruled in Roe that a woman's right to privacy exists from the beginning of her pregnancy on. The state can start regulating for the health of the woman and the health of the procedure in roughly the second trimester of pregnancy, and then the state can start regulating abortion to protect the interests of the viable fetus at the point of viability, which is roughly the third trimester. It's worth noting that as much as we talk about Roe v. Wade, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, a 1990s case, really undid a lot of the structures of Roe, but did reaffirm the idea that a woman does have, within the right to privacy, a constitutional right to terminate a pregnancy.
Viability in some states is 22 weeks, 24 weeks, 26 weeks. Who determines what viability is?
It's a great question in the sense that it's not entirely clear. The point of viability keeps being pushed further and further up. The court hasn't really gone into the specifics of viability, but it's just sort of using viability as a general point. The more recent cases have just sort of moved well before viability. So there was certainly a critique of the decisions that viability keeps being sort of a moving target as medical, science gets better and better.
So correct me if I'm wrong, states cannot outright ban abortion.
Under the existing precedents of the Supreme Court, states may not entirely ban abortion.
So how restrictive can a state's abortion law get before it's unconstitutional?
Well, ultimately unconstitutional is whatever the Supreme Court says, right? Under Casey, a state may not impose an undue burden on a woman's ability to terminate a pregnancy. Now, how undue is undue? What is a burden? So it's suggesting that they can impose a burden. It just can't be an undue burden. And so a lot of the last decade or so of regulation has been about, well, what about this? What about this? What if we put this burden on? What if we put this burden on? How far does it have to go to become an undue burden? A lot of the focus of states trying to ban abortion, but really states trying to limit abortion, were through a variety of laws trying to really test the boundaries of what made something an undue burden on abortion.
So Texas and Mississippi have gotten these cases mm-hmm. before the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
So with the new 6-3 conservative majority, has the likelihood increased, do you think, of overturning Roe v. Wade? What kind of effect do you think that new ratio will have on this case?
I mean, all attempts to predict the Supreme Court are on some level, staring into a crystal ball.
Well, what do you think based on your studies of these cases?
I will say, I think it's anytime the Supreme Court even takes a case, there's a real signaling aspect to that, right? What the Supreme Court gets it is offered lots of cases it could grant cert to every term. So why is it taking a particular case? It seems more likely to everyone who's sort of trying to figure out what the court's going to do that they're taking it because they do want to engage with the question of abortion, the right to privacy, what that all looks like. And so that combined with the 6-3 majority, I think a lot of people are very worried for the future of Roe and Casey.
Are you worried?
Yes. I think, in terms of where the action would be the next day, if the Supreme Court did overrule Roe, the next day it would be a question for state legislatures about what they're going to do. Are they going to ban it? Are they going to protect it? Are they going to limit it? Because then they can sort of do anything they want. So that's sort of one question. The next question would then be, would people in Congress, if anti-abortion politicians won both houses of Congress, would they pass a federal ban on abortion? So even the states that wanted to have legal abortion could not have legal abortion. So that's the next, another open question.
Grissinger says there's no way to uphold the Texas and Mississippi laws without overruling court precedent or dramatically rewriting laws regarding abortion restrictions in the United States. Next week, I'll be homing in on the repeal of the Parental Notification of Abortion Act and what that means for minors and parents in the state of Illinois. Be sure to tune in and check our website, WNUR.news, for more on today's debate over abortion rights in America. For WNUR News, I'm Angelina Campanile. Thanks for listening. If you're a tennis fan, you most likely already know about the new King Richard movie out today. WNUR News reporter Emily Zoe speaks with the film's cast at an advanced screening hosted by Warner Brothers. Here's a behind-the-scenes listen.
You've definitely heard of Serena and Venus Williams, but maybe not of their father, Richard Williams. I was the same way until I was invited by Warner Brothers for an advanced screening of King Richard, a film about the origins of the Williams sisters and the father who pushed them to become the globally recognized super athletes they are today. King Richard is also a true story. Training in literal rain or shine in Compton, California, the film shows us obstacle after obstacle that the Williams family faced, but more importantly, the initiative that the family took to overcome them. Will Smith plays the titular King Richard. He's joined by Sanaa Sidney and Demi Singleton, who play Venus and Serena Williams respectively. The cast also features Anjanou Ellis, John Bernthal, and Tony Goldwyn. They're directed by Renato Marcus Green. Today, you'll hear them discuss the struggle to create an accurate story, how the acting process changed them, and what they hope audiences will take away from King Richard. The movie sits at the nexus of many well-trodden genres, sports, autobiographical, and family drama, just to name a few. Director Rinaldo Green speaks on foregrounding the humanity of King Richard's story.
But in making the movie, obviously, I wanted to make a movie that my mom could see, and she's never seen a tennis match before. But she understands what winning and losing is. She understands what family is. She understands what love is. And she understands what that kind of core is and what it comes to, she understands what struggle is. And there were things that are relatable to folks like my mother who could see this movie and enjoy it and still understand what's happening and not get lost in sort of the technical aspects.
Despite ultimately being about Richard Williams, the film does not give him complete credit for the Williams sisters' success. Listen to Anjanou Ellis, who plays Orisine Price, the Williams sister's mother, speak on this.
They sort of insisted that Miss Orisine would not be in the shadows. Yeah. And as you said, we have these stories where you have the heroic male figure. But to do something where we did not see that Miss Orisine was a co-conspirator of this crazy dream would have been dishonest. Mm-hmm. And we worked on that and tried to give her the presence that she deserved to have, because that was the truth. Yeah.
Isha Price, who is Venus and Serena's sister and also served as an executive producer, speaks about how important getting the story right was to the Williams family.
We really bought into the idea of what this could be and doing it right and being authentically ourselves. And that took some time. because that vilification aspect is still out there, and we being able to trust that this group of people, this filmmaker and this production team and everyone would do this the right way, when oftentimes in sport, obviously you get one chance at it. Mm. You get one time to step up to the line and serve that ball for that point.
Authenticity was also a concern for the actors. Demi Singleton, who played Serena Williams, discusses the importance of accurately portraying her real-life counterpart.
Yeah, to bring everything together and make it feel as real as possible, I think Sanaa and I just did a lot of research. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really important to us that everything we did was real.
Will Smith, whose performance has been highlighted in many critic reviews, describes how taking on the role of Richard Williams changed his own perspective as a parent. As the father of Jaden and Willow Smith, listen as he describes what he learned during the movie's filming.
For me as an actor, when I take a role also, I'm taking it to explore something. I'm taking it to learn something. And that was a new parenting idea for me of aligning with your children versus directing your children. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a very, very different concept and approach that was magical in the Williams family.
Though much younger than Will Smith, Sanaa Sidney, who played Venus Williams, also found the filming experience enriching.
I think what I'm going to take away from this is just being able to step into Venus's shoes helped me grow as a young woman. Mm-hmm. You know, they were so humble at such a young age, and you know, they had such a great father. And I think, you know, again, family is everything, and that taught me so much. It made me, you know, go out there and reach out to people that I haven't talked to since I was little.
Part of King Richard's emotional core is how Venus and Serena were and still are trailblazers for young Black women around the globe. Venus speaks about what she hopes they'll take away from King Richard's story.
Always believe in yourself, never doubt. Doubt does nothing for you, but the same time you're doubting, the same time you can spend believing in you and putting the work in, so that way you do believe and build confidence.
Serena also added,
you really do have to ultimately just believe in yourself, and anything is possible, and it's not too high if you set your goals at the sky. The sky is literally the limit, so don't be afraid to set high goals.
King Richard will be released today, November 19th, in both theaters and HBO Max. For WNUR News, this is Emily Zhou.
52 years after its first episode, Sesame Street welcomes G. Young, the show's first ever Asian-American Muppet. Reporter Nick Song tells why this Muppet debut is so important.
Have you heard about the new kid on the block? She's 7 years old, loves skateboarding, and shredding on the electric guitar. Her name is Chiyoung. She's Korean-American, and she's the newest Muppet joining Sesame Street. Chiyoung will be the first Asian-American Muppet on the long-running children's TV show when she debuts next week. Sesame Workshop, the nonprofit behind Sesame Street, says Chiyoung was created as part of its racial justice initiative called Coming Together. The show hopes Chiyoung will play a key role in countering Asian hate in response to a surge of violence and racism against the PETA community during the pandemic. The character will be introduced during the show's Thanksgiving special called Seeing Us Coming Together. In the episode, residents of Sesame Street celebrate Neighbor Day, a community event with food, music, and games. However, in the episode, someone off-screen tells Chiyoung to go back home, a racist insult commonly flung at Asian Americans. Chiyoung is initially upset, but the residents of Sesame Street come together and comfort their new friend, with the help of guest stars like actor Simu Liu and tennis star Naomi Osaka. They all assure Chiyoung that she belongs here as much as anyone.
I think there is a great psychological effect of not seeing yourself and your communities on mainstream platforms.
That's Rinka Shimizu, She's a current senior and one of the club heads for Asian Pacific American Coalition, a student group on Northwestern's campus.
We basically create a safe space for people identifying as a PETA to talk about any issues related to our identity, but also just encompassing the college experience, being, you know, Asian American on a predominantly white campus.
Shimizu immigrated to the U.S. when she was 6 and didn't grow up watching Sesame Street. Nevertheless, she sees Cheung's arrival to Sesame Street as a victory for Asian Americans in their fight for representation in the media.
Children's entertainment as kids, it's one of the ways that we learn about the world. You know, we can't travel everywhere. We don't know much yet. TV media is our way into knowing what the world looks like, and that's sort of where we form our worldview.
When it comes to Sesame Street, Asian Americans are nothing new. Japanese American actor Alan Maroka has been on the show for the past 20 years, playing Alan, the current owner of Hoover's store. Yet Cheung's arrival to the show is special. It's another way for young Asian American viewers to see themselves further represented.
I think in the past year, especially with the rise of anti-Asian racism, I think we as a country have realized that such experiences are very common for Asian American children to be told to go back home or things like that. We are part of the community in America. It's amazing that they have named it as a problem, as something that deserves to be recognized, and as something that people, not just Asian Americans, but any child watching it should be aware of, and to know how that makes Asian American children feel.
Cheung's inclusion as a character allows Sesame Street to tackle stories and lessons about the Asian American experience that they otherwise couldn't tell. With Cheung's official arrival to Sesame Street, there's only one question left to ask. What will kids think of Cheung when they meet her for the first time? For that insight, I knew the perfect source to turn to.
Is it easier to do it on the computer? We're gonna be home in literally 5 minutes.
That's my younger brother, Tucker.
My name is Tucker Song, and I am 7.
He loves playing baseball, learning about dinosaurs, and, like Cheung, is Korean-American.
What do you think of Sesame Street?
It's okay, but I really liked it as, like, a 2-year-old.
As a 2-year-old? I think maybe last year.
Yeah, last year. That's later. I don't remember when I watched it, but I like it. I really do.
So, did you know that there's an Asian American Muppet joining Sesame Street?
No.
What do you think about that?
I think it's probably good. Yeah, I think I'm gonna watch it again. So, now that there's that character.
Very cool.
I've been waiting my whole entire life for that, so.
What's that?
Waiting my whole entire life.
You've been waiting your entire life?
Yes.
All right. Thanks so much, Tuck.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Sesame Street's first episode with Cheung is set to air on Thanksgiving Day. Families can watch the episode on PBS Kids, HBO Max, and Sesame Street's YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram. For WNUR News, I'm Nick Song.
As Northwestern students start packing up for Thanksgiving break next week, reporter Madison Bratley asks what they've learned so far this academic year. Here's a story.
Could you say your name here in school, please?
My name is Isaiah Lopez. I'm class of 2023, so a third year in Weinberg.
My name is Ciela Inina Hatsue, and I'm a first year student in Weinberg.
Name is Dan Young. I'm a third year junior, and I'm in McCormick. Okay,
thank you.
Thanksgiving break starts Wednesday, November 24th. Some students who are traveling home aren't planning on returning until winter classes start. Before the holiday, I interviewed some students about their reflections on the fall quarter.
What was your favorite class this quarter?
I would say my favorite class this quarter was my global health class, which was social determinants of health. It was a really eye-opening class, and I learned a lot about myself and like my own health and my family's.
I would say my Swahili class.
CS321, about programming languages. I think it's pretty cool because of the programming assignments are both challenging but also like quite fun in the process of doing it.
What's your favorite place to go get food this quarter?
That's a complicated question. I guess Elder.
So my favorite place to get food would definitely be 10Q Chicken, which is over on Church Street. I had heard a lot about like recommendations from friends, so I was like, you know what, I'll go like finally check it out.
Sargent, because my first year I lived in Sargent and I just miss Sargent, so I like getting food there.
Favorite show slash movie right now?
My favorite show right now would have to be Jane the Virgin. I actually just finished it this past weekend with my boyfriend. We had been watching it together, so it was really fun to binge watch it and get emotionally invested into it. Like, I really recommend it. It's like, it's got to be like in my top three favorite of all time.
Favorite song or album right now?
I'm from China, but I used to live in Costa Rica. So recently I've just been listening to like some Chinese songs and like some like Tico songs, Latino songs. They're pretty good.
Could you describe a time where you felt like you had good luck this year?
I think that I had good luck sitting next to my friends with whom we study together now, earth science class.
I would probably say I've been like learning how to skateboard, and I guess like during that entire process I feel like I've had good luck because I haven't hurt myself while doing it and I haven't like hit anybody. So I think like that, like during that whole thing, I've just been really lucky.
What's one good memory from this quarter?
I have many memories. I think the retreats that I have gone to with one campus ministry called Crew, but also time spent with other Burundians and Rwandans from Northwestern.
One good memory, when I got the email that I got accepted to like a research position in the lab this quarter, I was very excited about it because I've been like looking for research like all summer, and like I finally got an interview, and like literally the day later they're like, yeah, we'd love for you to join us. So I was very excited about it and very happy about it because it was like, oh, finally, like my work is paying off.
One good memory this quarter is last week I slept at 12. That was a change from 2 or 3. That was pretty good. Yeah.
Something you learned this quarter?
I think it's about scheduling my activities in order to not feel stressed about what you might have done earlier if you had planned for it.
I need to reevaluate how I study. I can definitely tell that the study habits that I had in high school and like my first year aren't really working out as well anymore.
Don't procrastinate. Get things done as soon as possible. And just, you know, have a good outlook to life because, you know, it'll be tough, but, you know, you're going to get there eventually.
What's something fun you've been meaning to do that you haven't done yet and you want to do over break?
Probably just reconnect with some of, like, my friends who are at other colleges just because I haven't in, like, probably about a year. Like, we haven't hung out in person or anything like that, and I know that a lot of them will be home.
Being in a wildlife kind of setting.
Thing I want to do over break is get an offer letter for an internship. That'd be great.
What is something you look forward to next quarter?
I look forward to having a more balanced sleep and eating schedule.
So this quarter I actually switched majors. I used to be a neuroscience major, I'm now a psych major, so I'm looking forward to taking more of those psych courses because that's like what I've really started to become really interested in.
My friend asked me to join their club for swing ballroom dancing. I really wanted to join, but like this quarter has just been super busy, but I will definitely do that next quarter. And I like dancing, so I wanted to join.
Do you have any Thanksgiving break plans?
I do. I'll be spending Thanksgiving with my dad's side of the family. We always go to the Thanksgiving Day Parade downtown in the morning, which it's just a good time for me to like reconnect with my dad's side of the family, especially because I don't see them as often during the year now that I'm away at school.
I plan to go to Michigan with some friends.
Do you have any Thanksgiving break plans?
Nope.
Last question to wrap it up. What's something that you're thankful for?
I'm thankful for the people that I have got to know so far. I really didn't expect to have small communities here and there. In classes or in my dorm or other Africans and also a Christian community.
I'm thankful, you know, to be here, having this opportunity to study CS, and like I'm an international student, so I'm like really glad I got into Northwestern, and like I'll try to make the best out of it and try to make friends and have fun in the process.
Something I'm thankful for is just like the overwhelming support that I get from my family. I talk to my mom and my dad every week, and it's just always so reassuring that like I can tell them about like how school is going and the concerns I'm having, and they're like always ready to listen and always ready to give me advice. And like they always give me like really, really good advice that has actually helped me a lot. So I'm just very hopeful that I have that strong relationship with my parents, that I can go to them about the things that are like bothering me about school and just in general.
For WNUR News, I'm Madison Bratley.
In other news before we go, Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted today of all charges after pleading self-defense in the deadly Kenosha shootings last summer. The jury came back with its verdict after 3.5 days of deliberation. The 18-year-old Illinoisan could have been sentenced to a life in prison if found guilty of the most serious charge against him, homicide. He killed 2 men and wounded a third with an AR-style semi-automatic rifle. The shootings occurred during a night of protest over police violence against black people following the death of George Floyd. Turning now to the weather. Right now, it's a brisk 37 degrees on the Evanston lakefront. Tonight, the low will be 35, and tomorrow, a mostly cloudy 48 degrees. If you're going to Wrigley Field tomorrow to watch Northwestern football play Purdue, be sure to dress in layers. Kickoff is at 11 a.m. And definitely layer up Saturday night, as the low will reach 21 degrees. Thankfully, it'll climb back up to 48 again during the day. The majority of next week will be mostly cloudy in the high 30s and low 40s. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on Twitter at WNURnews.com. You can listen to these and other stories of the day on our Spotify, Google Podcasts, and on our website, WNUR.news. Again, that is WNUR.news, and our Twitter is at WNURnews. Our producer today is Sarah Kadora, and our reporters are myself, Emily Zhou, Nick Song, and Madison Bratley. For all of us here at WNUR News, I'm Angelina Campanile. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next time on Monday, November 22nd at 6 p.m. Now back to scheduled programming.